Welcome back to Dating Games, the Modern Relationships Podcast. I'm your host, Poppy Temps. My guest is sticking a finger in and out of her mouth. What is that about?
I was brushing my teeth with my finger. I'm sorry. I had like stuff stuck in my teeth. I was just getting it out. Let's do that again. Sorry.
No, keep it. I think that's the fastest we've ever gone off the rails in an intro.
No. Fingering my mouth while I'm trying to talk.
Don't keep doing it. It's so distracting.
I love how it's making you embarrassed. Is it making you embarrassed? Is that what it is? It's like the blushing.
Don't turn this into me being pent up. No, it's distracting to see anybody figuring them out. Right.
Do your thing.
So this week, I mean, you could probably guess already who the guest is. If you're a listener of my other show, you'll know them as the artist formerly known as Annie Harris, now has a new name, and we'll talk a bit about the reasons why in the interview. They are a performance artist with a background in musical theatre, comedy and improv. Also co-host of the Contrived and Insufferable podcast, which is an improv show they co-host with their fiancé. I almost forgot the word fiancé then, that's how single I am.
What's a fiancé? What does that mean?
I almost said spouse. No, that's right.
Yeah, I've started calling in my husband, to be honest.
Well, I mean, who knows when you'll get married.
Thanks, COVID.
All right, so please welcome to the show and to your ears, Erin Emphis.
I'm in your ears. Hello. How's it going?
Well, thank you for being here. For background, like, we know each other very well. We've got to work together loads.
Too well, I think we know each other. We're being very naughty and very silly and very giggly.
Among other things, Erin has probably fallen asleep on every floor in my home.
Look, I have chronic fatigue, okay? I need to sleep, and if I need to sleep right now, it's going to be right now.
Yes, so if you want to hear more about that and fibromyalgia, another condition you've collected, then we have an episode talking all about it. No, I do feel that way, though. I think about that sometimes. I'm like, I feel like I'm collecting conditions. I've got dyslexia, depression, anorexia. Yep. I'm like, what is next? Yep. Who knows?
I've got fibromyalgia, ADHD, hypermobility spectrum disorder, IBS, insomnia, migraines, depression, anxiety, obsessive compulsive disorder, and complex PTSD.
And they're just the ones today.
And I'm queer. Yeah. I've literally got like a whole list, and I've, you know, so many times I've been to hospitals and they're like, what do we need to know about? And I'm like, take a big breath. Try to do it to supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. And that worked because at the time I thought I had endometriosis.
Uh-huh.
So it fit quite nicely in the end, but I don't do it anymore because I don't have endometriosis, which is, you know, great, but also I've got a lot of other stuff going on. So I was like, okay, cool. We'll take that one off the tab. So I need to write a new song now. Maybe a rap. Obviously, you know Pokemon.
Yeah.
There was a poker rap associated with all the Pokemon. You know, you can get all the 150 Pokemon in one song.
I did not know that.
Oh, it's a banger. Oh, it's a real banger. I'll tell you what, I'll play it to you after the... Or can we use it as my outro? Can I have some outro music for the poker?
Do you want some mic drop music at the end?
I want the poker rap. Pete, this is a formal request to have the poker rap in this lesson. So at some point... Sorry, I do a lot of lessons over Zoom, so my brain's like, lesson mode. This is not how I teach, by the way. Anyway, I'm going to shut up now.
All right, so to somewhat stay with the format of the show, first off, you've got a story to tell us.
Yes. When I was at university, I was on the dating apps, as most people are when they're in their early 20s, and I spotted a guy on there. He was kind of good looking, and I was like, okay, cool. So I was chatting to him. And he was like, I'm in London visiting my friend for the weekend. And I was like, cool, okay, so, like, let's go grab a drink. Like, this is going to be a very brief but nice thing, but, like, let's go grab a drink. I got to the place and he was just as good looking as he was in his pictures. It wasn't like a sudden, like, oh, my God moment, but he was just, we weren't clicking at all. Like, it was going really badly. I felt really uncomfortable and I was like, I'm going to have to leave. And instead of doing it maturely and, like, sensibly, like I should have done, but obviously I was, you know, 20 at the time, so I was like, I don't know how to deal with this because I don't know how to adult yet. I got one of my friends to call me and tell me that I had to come home because there had been like a flood or something, a fire at the house or like something, you know, drastic. So anyway, I was like, yeah, I've got to go to the problem at the house, off I go. And then a couple of weeks later, I started chatting to this other guy on a dating app, and he was like, you're really fit, I really want to go out with you. I was like, cool, you're really fit as well, I really want to go out with you. We went to the same pub that I went to with that guy from the other date, and he was like, yeah, that was my friend. He was visiting me in London, and then he came home and he was really, really upset that you'd like bombed on him, basically. Oh, the doorbell just went, great. Sorry, I'll do that again.
It sounds like we're in an airport. I think we should keep it.
Bing bong. The next flight to Sydney International. Yeah, so he was like, that was my friend. And he was really upset that you left in such a obviously fake fashion. And I was like, oops. But then I had sex with him, so that's fine.
What? I don't know. Does I that had sex with that?
The second guy. So yeah, I was like, yeah, okay, but also let's bang. And he was like, okay, so we did. And then I never spoke to him again. Ah, youth.
I don't even know how to interpret that. Is that a good outcome?
A good outcome for me. It was fine. It all worked out just fine for Erin.
I just loved right at the start, you said something along the lines of, he was somewhat attractive. And I was like, yeah, standards.
Yeah. Yeah. 20-year-old Erin had very low standards. I think at one point it was pretty much like, do you have an Australian passport? I had a real thing for Australian men when I was younger. So there was a running joke amongst my friends that all they needed was an Australian passport to get into my pants.
It was the only ticket they needed. I love
yeah,
that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad to say that I have grown up quite a bit since then.
Cool. But I'm still stuck on this story because I'm assuming the second one must have put some effort into finding you.
No, I don't think so. I think we just managed to, and also this was before apps were swipeable. So I'm really showing my age now. I was 20, 10 years ago. So Tinder didn't exist. It was all kind of like OkCupid style dating apps. So it was just a list of people in the area and you could message the ones you liked. It wasn't like a swipe right, swipe left kind of situation. So I was probably quite easy to find if we were nearby.
The intensity of finding you and not telling you and planning to have this kind of intervention with someone who is a stranger to them and who their friend doesn't really know at all either. You know, like I
then avenge their friend by having sex with me.
Yeah, and I have to be careful for legal reasons. So watch how I phrase this. I would allegedly be the person that would key a friend's car if they needed me to. For relationships, I am that kind of go-to friend. But even I am not...
Hypothetically,
definitely. But even I would not be going to an intervention with a stranger to tell them off because they upset my friend.
He didn't tell me off at all. He thought it was very funny. He was like, this is really, really funny and super awkward and cringe. But then I spotted you and thought you were fit, so I thought I'd message you anyway. So basically, he was just jumping in his friend's grave. He was not angry with me in any way.
Oh, I've completely misunderstood. I think that's actually worse.
Oh,
God, this story good. Has so many layers and I cannot decipher any of them.
I mean, should we? Do we have to? Is that the whole premise of the podcast?
No, I think we're going to have to move on. But thank you for sharing that one.
Put it down, Bobby. We don't look at it. It's like the sun. Don't directly look at it. It'll burn your eyes.
There is nothing to be learned from that. So, so instead, we'll move on to something that is very new information to me as of today, which is you mm-hmm. coming out as non-binary. And I also can't guarantee I didn't accidentally call you Annie, because it's what I'm used to. But hopefully it's a teachable moment. And you did say to me off air that whilst your preference is they pronouns, it's better that I try and prioritise getting your name right.
I'm not going to be triggered or upset by the use of she. I do prefer they pronouns. If you use they pronouns, that's an ideal situation for me. But she is just as fine. Using my old name is acceptable at this point because it's something that's so new. So I'm still in the process of telling people my new name. A lot of people still know me as Annie Harris. I don't expect people to be able to get used to it straight away. It's a tricky thing to do. So, but yeah, Erin is the new name that I'm going forward with. And this is officially my first engagement as Erin Emphis as well, which is really nice. It feels very full circle-y to come and do this project that we talked about, you know, countless times in the past, to come and talk about relationships and I suppose then in in the same hand sexuality and gender and all that comes with it. Yeah. It feels very full circle-y.
No, that's good, and I'm very excited to be Erin's first Yay. Engagement, which makes it sound like there's going to be wedding bells.
Oh, yeah.
So, do you mind sharing a bit of, like, what led up to that coming out?
Yeah, it had been something I've been considering for quite a long time. It was one of those... I feel it's a bit cliche to be like, well, I always knew something was different. Mm. But it is true, you know, I always felt like there was something within my identity that didn't match up. And I just hadn't really put my finger on it or realised what that was or had the courage to accept it and admit it to myself until very recently. So I lived my whole life up until, you know, a few months ago as a cisgender, and for about 20 years of my life, a cisgender straight woman. And then I came out as queer in my mid-20s and then came out as non-binary. I just turned 30, so at 30... So I'm engaged to a cisgender heterosexual man, but I'm also polyamorous as well.
Tell me if I'm wrong, but it seems like there could be a link there between, I always remember you for as long as I've known you, you've identified as queer, which is, if people aren't as familiar with that term, it's used generally now, although it, you know, used to be considered a slur, more so it's been reclaimed by the LGBT community now as a broad term that can encompass all sorts. And I don't think I'd actually met anyone before you that identified as queer. And so I remember you explaining it to me. And I was familiar with the term, but the way you explained it made a lot of sense, where you're like, well, there's kind of no limitations to it. So everything can fit under this, and it gives me room to change and evolve. And if, you know, I find new things that I'm attracted to, it all fits under this label. And I remember that sounding really freeing, but also interesting now to fast forward to you coming out as non-binary. It almost seems like no coincidence, like you perhaps knew there was more to figure out.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's not something that I considered before. I think I'm really reluctant with the idea of tying myself down to anything, and I don't know whether that's because of deep-seated emotional trauma or because that's just the way that I am. But I have always wanted to be able to provide myself with freedom and flexibility. And I came out initially as bisexual because that was what I felt I was. I was like, I'm attracted to boys and girls. And then after a few years, I was like, but there's so much more than boys and girls in the world, or people, and, you know, and some people aren't even a boy or a girl. And does that mean that I'm not attracted to them? No. I mean, at first I was very intimidated by them, and I was like, I'm not attracted to you because I'm terrified of you, but you're hot, but I don't know what to do with that, you know? So I think in realizing that there was so much more than boy and girl, then did I realise that I would prefer to identify as queer, because that felt like something that was more inclusive and encompassing than just I like boys and girls. That suddenly feels very, when I put it that way, it suddenly felt very restrictive. And that is something that I do not enjoy.
Yeah, and I think I'm similar in a way, but I'm somebody that doesn't have a label, so I generally just describe it as I have relationships with people of all genders. And that's for similar reasons, that whilst for the most part people do identify as male or female and can generally sort of fit into those boxes, although there are stereotypes of what it means to be either of those genders that can be quite restrictive, even for people that identify in that way. I think it led to a lot of questions that I didn't like. You know, I'd seen a lot of friends of mine come out as bisexual, and they got a lot of questions about, like, oh, but, you know, one day you'll have to choose, or, you know, which one do you like more? And actually, for me, it was a bit of a loophole to be like, I'd like people of all genders. And it took away some of the expectations that can come with having a label. And so for me, my version of freedom has been not having the expectations. And it kind of, to an extent, I mean, not everybody does. A lot of people just want to label me in their head anyway, and that's their business. Yeah. But for the most part, it means people have to actually try and understand, rather than transposing an identity that they're familiar with onto me and then complaining if I don't seem to fit it.
Yeah. I don't have anything to add on than the fact that that's their business. Like, that's nothing to do with you, what they want to define you as. I think I like to have an idea of where I fit within the spectrum, which is why I say I'm queer, non-binary, whatever. I like to have words for what it is so that I can then access resources, I think, is probably the reason that I enjoy knowing what I am. I'm saying this in inverted commas for, obviously, this is only auditory, but it's very useful to then be able to connect to other people online, you know, social media communities, that sort of thing. I didn't phrase that very well, sorry.
I know what you mean, though.
It's useful to be able to connect online to people like me and to be able to say, I guess that the closest thing I fit is maybe I'm pansexual, and then in that I can then find other people who also identify or maybe think they are the closest thing they are is pansexual. And I think particularly when you come from some kind of minority, and I've really picked, you know, I say picked, I've really had a bit of a shit lot, I think, in terms of minorities, because I'm queer and gender non-conforming and non-binary. I'm also disabled and neurodivergent, you know, so I'm kind of almost racking them up now. But I think when you are in a minority or a sort of a vulnerable group like that, it's important to be able to find the community to support you, because, you know, I grew up in a town where there's not even people, I mean, there are now because it's 2020, but at the time nobody was in any way LGBTQ+, or certainly not openly. And I think community is really, really, really important, which is why I prefer labels for that purpose.
I'm certainly not anti-labels. And in fact, it's not that I don't have labels. My labels are just on other things. You know, the community that I needed to find growing up was through being part of a minority background, being Irish. And so, you know, being around other minorities, being around other people with dyslexia, finding a community of people with lived experience of mental illness, like, they are the labels that I struggled with and that I guess I needed community for the most. And so that's kind of where I've ended up having my identities. And I think that's something that's maybe not talked about enough. You know, how do you decide which labels are not? Because any of us could have all sorts. And somewhere you've got to draw the line, and I guess it's how many you feel you need. You know,
that's true. That's super interesting. I was also just drifting off then thinking about the handkerchief code. Have you heard of the handkerchief code?
Yes, so it was a way for people who are interested in same-sex relationships to signal each other. Is that right?
Perfect. Yeah, I think it was gay men exclusive. I don't know if it's gay men exclusively, but in the vast majority it was gay men who would use handkerchiefs placed on different parts of their body and different colours of handkerchiefs to symbol what they were up or not up for, basically. And I was like, we need some kind of code. I wonder if queers have ever made some sort of code before. And then I was like, handkerchief code, yeah. I'm sure there are plenty others, but that was the first one that came to my mind.
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, wearing rainbow attire, although now it's a bit confusing because that's also associated with the NHS.
Yeah. I'm wearing a lot of rainbow stuff recently, just because I'm embracing this new part of my identity and just really enjoying the... I feel like I'm having a queer renaissance. I'm sorry, my puppy is barking. Can you hear him barking?
A little bit. It's cute. It's fine.
Oh, right. Sorry about that. Yeah, I'm enjoying wearing a lot of rainbow at the moment. I think I spend a lot of time wearing a lot of black and grey because I'm like, I don't know who I am or what my identity is. And now I'm like closer to, you know, figuring it out or understanding. I'm like, all the glitter, all the sequins, all the rainbows, all the time. Feels good, she says, while wearing a black top. But yeah, I got completely distracted by the dog barking.
That's okay. I have another question. You said earlier, when you first came across people that didn't fit in the gender binary, that you found them quite intimidating. Do you think that was to do with your own gender questioning that you hadn't really examined yet?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, 100%. And it wasn't so much an intimidation. Well, I suppose it wasn't intimidation. It was more a, you are so wonderful and so proud and bravely living your most authentic life. I want to be like you, but how do I be like you? I don't understand you. And I'm therefore absolutely terrified of talking to you, which I'm sure that, you know, knowing what you know about me, I'm sure you can't imagine me ever being scared to speak to anyone. But no. It was the awe of just like, you seem so comfortable and happy. And then I'm still a pretty chatty person. I'll just jump up and talk to anyone if I can. So eventually I've made friends with quite a lot of people who are gender non-conforming and sort of found my pack, if you like. Well, they found me. You know, you find the people that you're meant to find. And a lot of that community found me, or I found them through, you know, whatever pathway, and I became more comfortable with myself in the process.
Oh.
Thank you. I was like, I was going to add something to that sentence, but there was nothing to add. Just nice to sit in that silence in that moment and just be like, yeah, it was good.
Good.
It'd be nice.
Well, I'm very proud of you. And I do get it, because you've reminded me of a similar experience I have a lot in terms of mental health, that because I have a podcast talking all about it, as of course you know, it means that every so often I come across listeners in the wild, and we have that strange experience where they often recognise where they often recognise my voice before they recognise my face. And frequently I can tell that they're not divulging certain things to me. So they're really keen to talk to me, but they don't want to talk about their mental health. Many of them do, but there's a proportion that don't. And I think that's part of the reason. It's that similar thing where I'm so open about it to the point where I don't second guess it anymore. Like, I didn't really realise until having a whole platform how much I was second guessing even mentioning mental ill health.
Yeah.
And I was shying away from it, or I was dumbing down my language. And now I don't do any of that, because it's my default to talk about it. If I'm having a bad day, of course I'll be honest.
Yeah.
You know, it would feel disingenuous with what I campaign for if I didn't. But
what a great position to be in as well, to be able to say that's my default. Because I know that a lot of people probably would be really envious of that and your ability to do that.
I am really proud. I mean, it's been something I've really had to work at. I think it could be similar to what you described, though, that it's a high bar to set. So if anyone's not at that point yet, then the idea of talking to me and still having some stigma and being worried about saying the wrong thing, they may not want to talk about their experience. And so I find them talking about mental health in the abstract, but I can sort of tell there's something they want to talk to me about.
Well, people can only meet you where they're at. They can't meet you somewhere where they're not.
Mm.
And that's something that I've had to learn recently from various interactions. But people will often, when someone hurts you or you have a disagreement with someone, it's not that they're deliberately out to upset you. It's because they can only meet you where they currently are themselves. And that's really helped me in recovering from slights by other people, perceived or otherwise. That's something that I would, if we're going to start thinking about what my mantra is going to be, I think that would be a really strong tender.
But I think that is a really important message. That's something I have to remind myself, because it can feel like I should have the answer for people when it comes to mental health. And a lot of the time people expect me to, and nobody really has the answer to your recovery. It's an ongoing process. There's a lot that goes into it, and there is no shortcut to being well. In the same way, there's no shortcut to figuring out your sexuality or gender. You know, as you've learned, it's been a process.
Yeah. You've just got to do it. So I teach singing. It's my kind of my hustle job, my bread and butter job, if you like. I teach singing and performing arts to children, and they're always complaining about practicing and having to practice. And I'm like, I wish there was a magic practice pill that I could give you, so that you just take the pill and then you've done all the practice you need to do. But unfortunately, such a thing does not exist. I wish it did. My doctor said something similar about exercise once. It's just like, this exercise is probably, if we could pill exercise, we would be like the richest country on earth. Unfortunately, there is no pill for exercise. You just have to do it. It's the same as practice. It's the same as figuring yourself out. Unfortunately, there's nothing you can take or a button you can press. It just has to happen. You have to go through it. You have to go through all the stuff and the ugly stuff that comes with it, and you have to suck it up. And I think that's sometimes the hardest thing to digest, if we're going to go with more eating metaphors, that you just have to go through the ugly to get to the good. Yeah. End of sentence.
Yeah. No, but you're right. And I think there's the kind of collateral beauty in that, that you learn so much along the way that you wouldn't have. Even if the magical pills existed, yes, you might have the skill, but you wouldn't know what it's like to learn to be a brilliant musician. You wouldn't have gone through the process. You wouldn't have learned all the things to help with your mental health or things to figure out your identity. You wouldn't have necessarily found your tribe. You might have a perfectly formed identity and nobody that gets it. It's part of the process as well.
I haven't considered that as well, that you might be perfectly formed, but nobody who gets you. Fuck. Ow. My heart. Ow. My feelings. I really needed to hear that today, Bobby. Thank you.
Oh, good. Well, it's true. And that's one of the things that that scares me about people out there that are figuring themselves out and don't have people to look up to. And that's one of the reasons I think you're so brilliant, because even whilst you've been figuring it out, you live so proudly yourself. You know, you don't... It's true, you don't feel a need to explain yourself away or reduce down your bold personality. You're always 100% you, even if that you is changing.
Ow! my heart, that's so sweet. Thank you so much. It's a very, very kind thing to say. And I know you wouldn't say it if it wasn't true, which makes me feel even better. So thank you.
So we've obviously talked about gender in like quite a broad sense, but was there a particular point where you realised, okay, non-binary, that's where I fit?
I don't think there was a specific time. I don't ever remember having like a real light bulb moment. I think the idea that my identity was not secure came at the start of this year, and I was actually having some therapy for something separate, and I mentioned to that counsellor that I was having some struggles around my identity and sense of self, basically, because at the time I think a lot of my therapists were concerned I had BPD, and I'm sure you've got an episode on BPD that we can refer back to on mental. But yeah, so I mentioned it, and you know, I went through I won't go into too much detail about my journey with potential BPD because it's not mental, but anyway, it's one of the things that concerned me quite a lot. And I said, I think I'm having some questions around my gender and my sexuality. And they were like, okay, cool. So they sent me like this, not that our counselling was particularly gender or sexuality specific, but they sent me loads of like resources and like charity, you know, stuff to have a look at. And if I wanted to reach out to any of those people, then I could. So that was the first time that I was really like, okay, maybe this is something that I need to look at. This is something that can help me more authentic and true to myself. Another big moment, or another defining moment, was when I started streaming regularly with Tribes and Insufferable, which is a podcast I run with my partner Sam, and a lot of our followers on there come from a podcast network called Rusty Quill, because they're one of our friends runs a podcast through them and we featured on their stream, blah blah blah. So a lot of our podcast followers come from there, and a lot of their followers and their audience are trans and non-binary because of the wonderfully inclusive atmosphere that Rusty Quill has created amongst their fan base. So then I started talking to them basically on streams and on chat, and you know, on my Discord. Eventually it became successful enough that we felt that it warranted a Discord so we could communicate with our fans. And yeah, I think it was the gentle exposure and sort of loving support from that fan base that really made me feel confident enough to start saying those words to myself. I don't align with the traditional or expected image of what a woman is or a female person is. I don't feel that that suits me. And then I was like, well, I guess then that I'm some kind of gender non-conforming. I don't know what that is. Did a bit of research. Actually thought at first that my gender could be defined as demigirl. I don't know if you've heard of demigirl before, but it's when somebody feels sometimes female and sometimes something else. I think it's sometimes genderless or non-binary. And then I realized that I just fully reject gender as a construct. I completely reject the idea that people should act, behave, dress, think a certain way because of the things they have in their pants. And I think that's very strange and doesn't suit me or doesn't fit me. It felt like a badly fitting shoe that was giving me, you know, blisters and bunions and crushing my toes, you know, all of the poorly fitting shoe metaphors. So I actually mentioned it to one of my partners, and I already knew, well, by the time I met that partner, that I was gender non-conforming, and I said, I think I might be non-binary, and they were like, welcome to the non-binary / trans umbrella. And I was like, gosh, I've never considered myself to be trans. And they were like, well, you know, trans is an umbrella term for anyone who's not cis. But I mean, obviously, it's much more specific than that, and much more nuanced than that. It's a very broad way of putting it.
Yeah, and there's another term that's becoming more widely used, being cisgender, i.e. you identify with the gender you assigned with at birth.
Yes, yeah. And you feel comfortable in that gender identity, I think.
Yeah.
So implied as well. But I'm also still relatively cis-presenting, so it's quite easy to presume that I identify as female.
I'm going to jump in here. So it's
funny
timing, actually, that next week, as of recording, not of this going out, we're doing a two-part series on gender as a factor in mental health around World Mental Health Day. And that's been really fascinating to delve into and look not only at how the ideas of gender can be restrictive and can cause problems with our mental health, but also a lot of the stereotyping that exists within it. So certain conditions being considered more male or more female. As a man with an eating disorder, that was certainly something that held me back, not realising what was going on for me. And so I think I should mention the kind of differentiation that I think is still very early on in the way we speak about gender. So the idea of gender and sex being different. And they've always been different, like technically in a medical sense. So sex being whether you are male or female assigned at birth, usually relating exactly along the lines of your chromosomes. So either your XX or your XY chromosomes. Even there, it can get complicated because there's about 1% of the population globally that don't have that chromosome alignment. But gender is all the stuff after that. So sex you can attribute to men generally being taller than women. You can assign it to us generally having more hair on our face and other parts of our body. So there's those clear things, but then gender is all the stuff we add on top, is all the expectations of, you know, pink is a girl's colour and blue is a boy's colour, which is made up, or boys
women are nurturers, men are hunter-gatherers.
Boys don't cry, also made up, you know, and that's the stuff that really causes a problem as well. One of my guests, Juno Dawson, who's a trans woman and incredible author, you know, she said in her book about gender that maybe we'll get to a point where it's kind of irrelevant, that one day we'll get to a point where if you don't identify with the sex that you were assigned at birth, then you just act accordingly. And there isn't the problems of the expectations that you also fit narrow gender ideas.
I think it's important that you and I acknowledge the fact that this is still very early on in my journey, even though I've come out and it feels like it's all over now. And no, this is just the beginning of the journey. I'm still learning. You're still learning. Everyone is still learning and always learning, hopefully with the best intentions. And we're all trying our best. So if I or Bobby do get anything, then please feel free to correct us. We are more than happy to receive corrections. But I just wanted to acknowledge that this is something new that I'm navigating. And if I or Bobby don't get it right, then please forgive us. We are trying our best. And I think that's all anyone really can do. And obviously there are some people out there with bad intentions and are willingly not educating themselves. But I just want to make it very clear that I'm working very hard, and I'm sure Bobby is as well at the moment, to educate ourselves and make sure that we're using the most inclusive language possible. It's very important to me. And I'm sure, I've spoken for Bobby several times in this sentence, but I mean, I'm sure Bobby feels the same way as well.
No, I do. And I feel a certain responsibility with it as well. That whilst I identify as male and feel very comfortable with that, I have enough context and people in my life that I feel it would be ridiculous for me to not educate myself. And at the very least, you know, whilst I strongly identify as male and have no qualms in that area, I do rail against a lot of gender stereotypes. You know, I'm a guy that's making a career out of talking about his emotions online, you know.
Yeah.
I do not fit the boys don't cry mentality and the man up nonsense.
And good for you.
Thank you. And I also present in quite an androgynous way, like visually, in terms of like clothing and hair and painted nails and that kind of stuff.
I was going to say the painted nails are Bobby staple.
Yeah, which I kind of go in and out of. And that's a level of freedom that I feel and I feel lucky to have, because in many places in the world, that would be a controversial thing, whereas nobody really cares here and I'm rarely misgendered. But even if I am, I find it quite novel. But again, I don't have a sore relationship with gender. But the next thing I wanted to ask you about, which isn't the case for all non-binary people, is changing your name.
Yeah, sure. People who know me know that my old name was Annie. And Annie is a very feminine name to me. But also Erin is a traditionally feminine name. But when I had the stuff around, you know.
Also Celtic.
Yeah, that was the point. Yeah, so Erin means literally from Ireland, which I am very much not. But I am from Wales, and I enjoyed the sort of Celtic leanings in that my surname, or my professional surname, is Enfys, which is the Welsh word for rainbow, because I was like, I want to make this as gay as I possibly can. But
rainbow, I love it.
Yeah, Irish rainbow. So basically, Annie to me is a person who is sad and in pain and not happy with the way things are going, got a lot of ideas about who they should be and feeling very stuck. And I found that over time, I just didn't identify with that anymore. And I guess some people might think we could have reclaimed it. I just didn't identify with it. It felt like, again, it felt like a badly fitting shoe. I'm very grateful. I was saying to my mother last night, actually, I'm very grateful for the name that you gave me. It's a very lovely name and it's served me very well for 30 years, but it doesn't fit me anymore. And it's time for it to, you know, be hung up respectfully. And my partner actually said recently that they were very glad that I had come out and been more authentic and more sort of started showing up for myself more and being braver, but was talking with their therapist about my transition and sort of coming out and changing my name and that sort of thing. And the therapist said that often when people come out or transition, their partners can grieve the loss of the person that they were, even if they're happy for their partner. And he was like, that's kind of what I'm doing a little bit. It's like, because I mentioned before, I was like, I feel like I'm a butterfly. I've sort of, you know, I've come out of my cocoon and I feel very bright and colourful. And he was like, yeah, I love that you're the butterfly. I love that the butterfly is here, finally. The butterfly has been waiting to come out for a really long time.
You do love a metaphor, kind of bless you.
Yeah, I fucking love a metaphor. I have ADHD. I'm a very visual learner. He's like, I kind of miss the caterpillar a little bit because that's, you know, the person that I met and fell in love with. But I'm also very in love with a butterfly. So it's just a bit of a, even though it's a positive change, it's still a change for me. So we spoke quite a bit about that.
And I think that is tricky and it's fair to acknowledge that because, you know, even to use a very simple example, this person has gone for so much time having the label, i.e. name, of the person they're in love with be Annie. And so they've built up a whole love around this person, and this is what this person is called. And so that's a lot to move away from. And I think you've highlighted a lot of the similarity there of how this interacts with the identity of being trans. That in a way, you're kind of transitioning away from your gender, but you're not transitioning to another one.
I feel like changing my name was a way of showing up for myself, and Annie didn't fit me anymore, and I knew that changing my name to Erin would be a lot of hard work, it would mean change, it would mean paperwork, it would mean telling people, potentially having some backlash from my family, you know, which I'm very lucky that there wasn't any, but it felt like the move that needed to be made so I could be the most authentic version of myself. And that ultimately trumped everything. You know, paperwork didn't seem like such a bother when I considered it that way.
Right. Well, it really feels to me like a fresh start, that you were setting this intention of a new life, a new chapter almost, and this is who you were going to be. And I think particularly being a creative person, that maybe makes even more sense in the same way often people have stage names. And so it's a way that you're setting this intention of this is who I'm going to be and I'm going to work to live up and become that
And
person.
I actually considered just changing my stage name at one point and changing my name for work and then keeping my legal name. And then I realised that that wasn't what I wanted to do very quickly after I sort of thought to myself that would be it. I think maybe the next day I was like, no, I don't want to do that. So my legal name is Erin Enfys Ray, because Ray is my partner's surname and Enfys is my middle name, but I'll be using Erin Enfys for work because I love a bit of alliteration. And also it's just a bit of work-life balance. I mean, I worked as Annie Harris and was legally Annie Harris for a long time. Sometimes it was really difficult to make a difference between work and life, because I think having a company name essentially is what it is when you're a performer. You're essentially a company or a service or a product or whatever. Having a company name really helped me put my work hat on, which I found when I started teaching. So I think having a separate name for work and personal stuff, even though they're not technically different, but having a separate name for work will be really helpful for me in the future. And I don't know where this transition leads me artistically. I know that I still want to carry on with creating things. That's about as far as I've got.
That's lovely and broad.
Yeah, exactly. I want to create stuff for people.
I think you raise like many interesting questions there, because I think there are elements of how we all have to figure out gender. And yeah. Even you've reminded me of my mum kept her maiden name with her work, because, you know, she's published so many scientific papers and become so established in her field of medicine. And so then to use the word transition to then suddenly everyone's got to change what their name is for her in their contacts. And she changes all her email footers and all these papers that were under her unmarried name then don't link together. You know, it all just looked very complicated. And so she kept her maiden name for work. And then she obviously has her married name the rest of the time. And I think for her, that's been a good way of making the compartmentalization make sense.
Yeah, it's sensible. I even also considered changing my legal name and keeping my old name for work. And I thought, well, actually, the old name was somebody who trained to do something very different to what I want to do now. You know, Annie Harris trained to be in musical theatre, and then Annie Harris got diagnosed with chronic pain and fatigue. So it kind of almost feels like a letting go of something that doesn't serve me anymore in so many different ways. You know, holding on to the dream of doing what I wanted to do when I was 21 does not make sense to me at 30. And it's taken a long time for me to accept that, because I've really wanted to hold on to my dream. And I do still want to work in musical theatre or with musical theatre in some respect. But, you know, I don't want to be on Broadway or West End 8 nights a week. I mean, I'm not capable of it and I don't want to do it. And Annie Harris felt like the name of somebody who really wanted that. And I was able, and letting that go feels very cathartic.
And I can tell.
Letting go of things that don't serve you anymore, even when you've worked very hard for them, is very cathartic and very freeing. Basically, this whole week that I've been, you know, coming out and emailing people and telling people that kind of thing, I've not even thought about creating something or work or, you know, making things, or I have to do this, or I have to stay present on social media or whatever. But I've just gone, you know what, you don't know what direction you're going in, so give yourself a break. And it's been really, really nice to not be in work mode for a little while and just prioritize my mental health and my coming out, and then see where that person wants to go creatively after that's all done. I think that's the most important thing first.
Yeah. And to use a metaphor, as you like, you feel a lot lighter for all of this. It does seem like a weight off.
Ow, my heart. Ow, my feelings. I really needed to hear that today, Bobby. Thank you.
Oh, good. Well, it's true. And that's one of the things that scares me about people out there that are figuring themselves out and don't have people to look up to. And that's one of the reasons I think you're so brilliant, because even whilst you've been figuring it out, you live so proudly yourself. You know, you don't it's true, you don't feel a need to explain yourself away or reduce down your bold personality. You're always 100% you, even if that you is changing.
My heart, that's so sweet. Thank you so much. It's a very, very kind thing to say, and I know you wouldn't say it if it wasn't true, which makes me feel even better. So thank you.
If anyone wants to know what it's like co-hosting a podcast with me, it's a lot of compliments that get saved up.
I like compliments. Compliments are my love language. So I'm a real complimenter and like to receive compliments.
Ooh, plot twist. Maybe we do get married after this.
Ooh, maybe. Exciting. Well, I'm already engaged to somebody else, but I'm sure they won't mind. I'm polyamorous.
Well, that brings on the next topic for us really well. So polyamory. And again, I have to admit that I hadn't met anybody polyamorous before I met you. I was somewhat familiar with the concept, but I think I saw it as this kind of abstract Louis Theroux documentary style thing.
My partner does a great impression of Louis Theroux, where he just comes up to me and looks me dead in the eyes and goes, "Is that true?" I'm like, "Stop Louis Theroux-ing me. Stop it." I didn't know anyone who was polyamorous before I met me either, so don't worry about it.
So if I was to define what it is to be polyamorous off the top of my head, it's somebody who is open to romantic and physical relationships with more than one person.
Exactly. So poly obviously means many, and amory means love, Greek or Latin or something like that. One of those old languages, or it just comes from the root. And yeah, that's basically what it is. It's dating or having physical relationships with more than one person. And whether that means that your partners are involved in each other or not is something that you can define for yourself, and not something that you can also define for yourself at the start, and then that's kind of it. It's a very fluid, living, breathing organism. I don't want to say monster. That's probably not the word I wanted to use. But that's another thing that I really like about it, is that it is something that, changes and gives people freedom, which is very important to me.
I like that idea of freedom. You know, it really kind of runs through so much of what we've talked about, and perhaps people might find it ironic given the expectations that are so commonly put on us with relationships. But for me, when I heard about your experiences of polyamory, it sounded incredibly grown up. The fact that all this communication went into having multiple partners, them understanding that they're all important to you and that these relationships are separate but also related to each other. Something that was maybe tricky initially to wrap my head around, because I think when I first met you, you were dating two guys and a girl, and the girl also had a girlfriend in a long-term relationship.
Close, yeah. So when we met, I had two male partners, and then I was dating a couple as well. So the girl was part of a couple with another man. So I was, yeah, but I was sort of, my main relationship was with her, but I was also involved with the guy in that relationship as well.
Okay.
Also, it's really well remembered, considering how complicated that situation was at the time.
I guess it's also testament to, see, I wasn't lying. It was something for me to wrap my head around. So, yeah, and I remember just finding this really interesting, and that it really resonated with me. And I didn't really know at the time why. And then I thought about it more, and I asked you more about relationships, and I wondered whether I was polyamorous as well. But certainly that idea of being open to more than one relationship seemed to resonate with me. So I wouldn't say necessarily I am polyamorous, but I also don't think I would be closed off to it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
There are situations that could come up that I would be open to that I'm aware not everyone would. And
yeah, polyflexible, let's call it.
Yeah. And
let's coin our own term.
Just determined to give me some more labels. But I think the nearest I've got to it was, I actually, and I don't know if I told you this, I went on a date with a couple last year.
Woo! Fun! Isn't it fun? I think you did, I feel like you did mention it. I think you told me that you were talking to a couple or thinking about dating a couple, but you didn't tell me about the date itself. How was it?
Well, so I think I should give some background context. So I was away with a friend in Malta, and we had a really lovely holiday. We were both super stressed with work and we needed to get away. And she is brilliant at finding incredibly good deals online. So we just tripped off to Malta for a few days, and we were talking about relationships a lot, and I was feeling in a bit of a rut about it, because as you know, most of the time I'm very happy being single, and I think I have spent enough of my adult life being single where it sort of feels like my default, right? That's how people see me. And that's quite nice in a way, because it's less pressure. You know, I think if maybe you're in a long-term relationship and then you get out of it, and that's what most of the people in your life have known you from, then there's that pressure of like, oh, well, you've got to get with someone new. Seen as something...
You're Erin, you have a relationship, yeah, and you're Bobby the singleton. Like, you're the bachelor, so no one expects you to become coupled, because you're just the bachelor, whatever you want to call it.
I don't think I've ever been called a bachelor, but no, I think that's true.
I mean, you technically are, I guess. Yeah. Like, that's, yeah, I know, weird, isn't it?
Yeah, where's my TV show?
Yeah, exactly. Well, like, when I think of bachelor, I think of Henry Higgins and Colonel Pickering in My Fair Lady, who were two confirmed bachelors that lived together, and their idea of fun was dressing up Audrey Hepburn in fabulous clothes. But I like the kind of hunting for queer coding and things, basically, is what I would have said. I enjoy that very much.
So our doorbell's just gone. Hold on one sec. Let me just see if I need to get that. Hello again. I think we should leave that in, that I had to run for the door, because we just had a delivery of Dating Games merchandise, which you can get exclusively if you join the higher tier of our Patreon. Ooh, there's a plug.
Fun! Did you plant? I didn't hear a doorbell. I think you were just like, oh, that's the doorbell. I'm like, I didn't hear the doorbell. And then I was like, oh no, he's actually gone. I'm on my own now. Oh no.
Anyway, back to what we were talking about. I should also mention, I am aware that part of the reason I have less pressure to be coupled up is because I'm male. And so I very much benefit from this prevalent idea that men choose and women are chosen. And so I just haven't chosen yet, whereas a woman has not yet been picked. I hate it. I wish it wasn't so common. But I got distracted by just talking about a lovely holiday in Malta. But, you know, I was going through this kind of grappling with, I enjoy being single, I'm very comfortable with it. Do I want to be single forever? No. And the longest relationship I've ever been in was abusive. And so at the very least, I'd like to get past 2 years with someone that's healthier for me. And so,
get a good one under your belt, huh?
Yeah, and so I was talking about this with my friend and saying, I want this, but also work is so crazy and I've got so much on, and a lot of people expect when they get into a relationship with me, they love all the creative projects that I do and all the traveling for my work, but then they also expect them to be my number one priority all the time, and those two things don't tend to quite match up.
Yeah, that's stressful. I imagine that's hard to navigate.
Yeah, and it's tricky because I think it takes them a little while generally to see the contrast of that, that they want me to be doing all these things and being super productive, and they find that kind of lifestyle and the things that I do attractive. So I have to kind of keep working to do that.
To keep them interested, but then also they're like, oh, but also I need you to spend some time with me. It's like,
yeah, well, but also know, can you take like 2 days off? I'm like, which days? Look at my calendar. Yeah.
But that comes from healthy communication from you and reasonable expectations from them. I think this is one of the things I really enjoy about polyamory, is that boundaries and expectations are always set out first before anything happens, which sometimes can kill the romance a little bit of it, because you have to be very open about what you can and can't do, because it's like, oh, you might be married and have children with somebody else, or you might have caring responsibilities, or, you know, whatever. But I think the thing that one of the things that attracts me so much about polyamory is the idea of love without judgment or any kind of control, or, I don't know, sort of like rose-tinted glasses, you know? And don't get me wrong, some moments can be very rose-tinted glasses. It's very nice to have two partners who love me very much, but it's also extremely difficult at times. And sometimes it can be really formal. Like one of my secondary partner was telling me this morning that they had a breakup not so long ago where their partner they were breaking up with gave them a spreadsheet about their breakup. And at first, my initial reaction was like, what the actual fuck? Yeah. I was like, what the hell? And then they were like, well, this person was autistic and their social processing and their social skills were alternative. And I was like, that's really interesting, because being neurodivergent myself, I really like the idea of defined structure and very clear boundaries and no guesswork around what people's boundaries and what people's limits are and that sort of stuff and what people need. I don't like playing the game. I like to be told up front, even if it does sacrifice a little bit of fun and excitement. So after a while, I was like, actually, that sounds really fucking helpful. I was like, I would really love a spreadsheet to guide me through a breakup, or, you know, anything where feelings or intentions can often be ambiguous and often aren't explained out of fear or, you know, anger or whatever. So in the end, I was like, yeah, I also want a breakup spreadsheet, sorry. If we ever break up, I'm gonna make a spreadsheet. They were like, okay.
Wow.
Actually, that's not completely true. I didn't say it to them. I said it to myself. I'm going to make that very clear, because I'll probably listen back to this and be like, you didn't say that. Why are you lying? So that I thought to myself.
Fair enough. And that's something that really fascinates me about it, is this idea of what I think is called compersion. Is that the right word?
Yes, compersion. Yeah. You feel happy for your partner if they're happy with someone else. Top polyamory term. I'm really impressed that you know that.
Thank you. We've got Louis Theroux to thank for that one as well.
Has Louis Theroux actually done a documentary on polyamory?
Yeah, I've not seen it.
Oh, yes, he has. I'm so sorry. Yes, okay. I have had a few people mention it to me, and I'll be like, yeah, I need to get around to watching it, and I never.
No, it's really interesting. So if people aren't familiar with that term, it's basically seen as like the opposite to jealousy, right? So you are happy for your partner being with somebody else and being around other people that make them happy. And I think even if that's something that can feel quite far out, and I think even for people that are polyamorous, it takes a bit of decoding your brain away from jealousy, right? It takes a bit of practice to tap into that.
I think we are human beings, we're socialized to be jealous. I think we're socialized and told that we should be jealous of someone looked at my partner a funny way, or my partner really fancies the, I don't know, the delivery guy or whatever. Like, that's something that I think we're socialized to think is wrong. And I think my moment of realizing I was polyamorous was when I realized that was the case. I had been socialized to know that jealousy and monogamy was the right thing, when actually I was like, there's this alternative out there which actually I feel identified much more with. Yeah, I think that was a real defining moment in my polyamory journey, when I was like, oh.
Talking about compersion and a lot of the freedom you feel around polyamory, was that kind of what drew you to realizing this could be for you in terms of wrapping your head around this approach to relationships?
Yeah, good question. I don't really remember the first time I was like, I'm polyamorous. Again, it was a very slow burn. The first time I was in a relationship with two separate people was when I was 27, and I'm 30 now. I had a boyfriend, and I had a girlfriend first, and then I had a boyfriend at the same time who was also polyamorous, and I met through friends. Like, it wasn't like a deliberate hunting for someone who was polyamorous. Just met him through friends, fell in love. He was like, I'm polyamorous. I was like, me too. And it was like, that's lucky, because I've already got a girlfriend. So, you know, and then I dated him and I dated her, and then I broke up with the girl and I broke up with the guy, and I was dating someone else by then, and blah, blah.
And so was there a clear point, Karen, where you had to think about, okay, there's this new person I'm interested in, you know, I need to have a conversation with them. I also need to have a conversation with her.
Yeah. So I met her on a dating app, and she already had a boyfriend, and she wanted to date a third or a unicorn. And I was like, well, I'm not super into him, but I'm really into you, so I'm cool with that. Like, I'm into him enough to see you both.
And the term unicorn is supposedly because people that want to be a third, particularly women that want to be a third, is considered quite rare, and therefore unicorn is
rare. Yeah, you know that term already pretty well, huh?
Well, I'm a bit jealous, because I'm like, it rarely applies to men, and I'm like, I feel like I could be a unicorn.
I've also dated a couple as well as a triangle, so we're all equally interested in each other, whereas this other one was like, well, I'm in a relationship with her, but I'll have sex with him if I have to, basically. That makes it sound like it was very unwilling and unconsensual. That's definitely not the way that it was, but it was like, I'm happy to have sex with him, that's cool, not enough, but we don't have much in common besides that. So,
but I think that is something that a lot of people find tricky to wrap their head around with polyamory, is that conflict of, you can love multiple people, but then what happens if you love some more than others?
Yeah, that can be tricky. I was actually talking to one of my partners about this the other day. They were saying what we would refer to in the polyamory community as my secondary. So I have Sam, who is my fiance, and, you know, we live together and we have a dog together and we're engaged and all these sorts of things. And then I have another partner who I just started dating. Obviously, we haven't been together as long. We're not engaged. We don't live together. We don't have any pets together, anything like that. That's what would make them my secondary. But we were talking the other day about this and what we call like hierarchical systems. It's like, are your partners, you feel like your partners are in a hierarchy? And I'm like, well, technically you are my secondary, because that's what you are, but I don't see you as my secondary. I love you both very much, but for different reasons and in different ways. If Sam and I have different experiences and a different bond, for sure, but I don't like the idea of rating my lovers and my partners. That feels very icky and uncomfortable to me.
So I guess it's more of a hierarchy in terms of logistics, almost. It's just different types of love. Is that fair?
It's a logistical, I think you've put the nail on the head, and that it's a logistical hierarchy, in that, like, if I was in an accident, Sam would be the one that they would call because he's my next of kin. However, if I was in an emotional emergency or crisis or situation, there would be no, I mean, obviously I live with Sam, so he tends to get the brunt of it, but there would be no preference as to who comforts me. And that, to me, feels like what love is really about. So the terms primary and secondary make me feel a bit icky, but I mean, again, I'll accept them, because sometimes it's a good shorthand, you know?
And so the way you've described it sounds like very easy, but was there a challenge in figuring all this out?
No, not really. Sam is not polyamorous himself. So he doesn't date outside of our relationship. And when we first got together, it was a conversation that we had about my sexuality and how he felt about that. I expressed to him that I was queer and polyamorous, and this was something that I was not willing to compromise on. However, when we first got together, I was in a position where I was not comfortable with dating anyway. I was more than happy with what we would call polysaturated in the polyamory community. I'm polyamorous, but I've got my hands full, so I'm not looking to, you know, take on anything
else. I love that phrase. So,
it's great, isn't it? I love it. Polysaturated.
And I love that term because I feel like I, in a way, have something similar but different. A lot of people get confused by it, and I understand me being contently single most of the time makes less sense now that I have a dating podcast and be slightly less believable. But no, it is true. And I think maybe that's my version of it, that I have quite a full life and I have a lot of incredible people around me who I really love, just not necessarily in that way. But then,
well, yeah, no, you've got your hands full and you're fulfilled, you know. That's basically what it means. So yeah, I was in a position when Sam and I met. Obviously we met and I moved in and we got engaged very quickly. And I mean, that I'm not saying that in a criticizing way. We knew it was right. We knew it was the right thing for us and we were very happy. But that was also a lot to do. So for a really long time I was like, honestly, I really don't want to date right now because I've got my hands and my head full with a lot of stuff. And you know, the more settled we got, the more I was like, is this still something that's a big part of me? And it's been a bit of a journey kind of working as a couple towards a position where Sam is comfortable with me dating other people. But the most important thing I think for us has been communication and honesty and making sure that each other's needs are met first before we pursue, you know, other relationships and partnerships, if you like. And I think that's the case with any relationship, really, is that if we have bad communication and no honesty, then it's a real deal breaker for me.
Yeah,
and that's one of the things I love so much about polyamory, is that you cannot do it without being 100% honest. And I think that's the best foundation for any relationship.
Yeah, love it. Points. You get points.
Whoop, whoop.
But I think the way you phrase that is very broad, in that you have to have that stable foundation. If, for example, you're considering having a kid in your relationship, you should have that first. And even to an extent with your other relationships, you know, your relationships with your family, your friendships will be more secure if the relationship, particularly if you're living with that person, is also secure as well.
Yeah, I agree. And that's why I think our bond is different, but I feel like the way I feel about them, it couldn't possibly be rated or judged. That feels really unfair and icky to me.
I know what you mean. So we'll start wrapping up, and I think you've already kind of got one in terms of rule of the game, but is there another thing you try and live by in terms of relationships?
Honesty, first and foremost. I try really hard, being polyamorous, I try really hard not to feel like I have to meet one person's needs in their entirety. I think another thing I really like about polyamory is that the expectation is that no one person will be able to meet all of your needs, and it's unfair for both yourself and the other person to expect that. To realise that you are human and you are whole, even in your imperfectness.
Oh, another point for Annie.
Bing, 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 bing. You mean Erin?
Sorry.
Sorry, don't worry.
Oh, no. Look, in my defence, for the context of the listeners, we've worked together for a long time. I found out on Monday about the new name and you being non-binary on the same day we started recording. So
you'll get there. Don't worry, it's fine.
Erin, you have been changed in my phone, so I'm doing the work.
Aww, yay, that makes me really happy. Thank you.
Hopefully I spelt it right. Erin, yes. Emphasis.
It's written on the Zoom. You can have a look at it. There you go.
Cool. Now I've forgotten that I also need to have one of these rules of the game. Got so distracted by yours. But I love what you said about being whole. I guess maybe I would add to it.
Sure.
That not only is it about, you know, not expecting to fulfill all of somebody's needs, but it's also the reverse version of that. I'm going to steal and revert your rule of the game, in that we also need to make sure not to expect the world from our partner. They're not going to be our happiness by just existing. They are not going to fix all our problems. They cannot fix all our problems. We have to always remain active in our own damn life. And that I try and look at relationships in that way. I sometimes talk about it as the cherry, i.e. the like cherry on top of a ice cream sundae, that this person should be adding to a life that you're already trying to make for yourself.
That's lush. I love that.
Which is great. I mean, it's complicated because I think sometimes I scare people off with that because I'm a little bit too whole and they...
My ice cream sundae is too big. La 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 la.
All right, we will wrap up there then. Thank you so
wrap
much.
Wrap it up, boys. I'll take it. Oh, boy. Bake them away, toys.
Oh, that's a whole other rule. All right, thank you.
Bye.
Thank you, Erin.
You're welcome, Bobbington.
Thank you for listening. For more content, including extended ad-free episodes, you can join our Patreon, linked in the episode description. Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta, with music by the brilliant Tessa Violet. Speak to you next Friday. Nidoran, Mankey, Venusaur, Rattata, Firo, Pidgey, Seeking, Jolteon, Dragonite, Gastly, Ponyta, Vaporeon, Poliwrath, Butterfree! Catch 'em, gotta catch 'em all.